Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Hearing Florio writing any articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He of that and NBC Sports. And he's brought to you by Webb Ford. Searching for a great deal on Fords in Chicago. Visit Webb Ford in Highland, Indiana. Mike, I saw the note yesterday that you posted that scoring is at a record pace through five games, that touchdowns are at an all-time record, and the viewership is high. The games are close. They're high-flying. This is what we want, isn't it?
Well, it's definitely what the NFL wants, and it's what the NFL thinks the fans want. And the NFL is pushing these numbers. I'm not crunching the numbers and doing research back to the 2013 season, 2011. These are numbers they're putting out. And scoring is up. Passing is up. It's amazing to me. The average passer rating is 93.4. I remember when 93.4 put you at the top of the league. Now it's the average. And that's a testament to improved quarterback play, improved receiver play. So many receivers now who can make the moves, can make the catches. You know, all these 7-on-7 camps and tournaments that we hear about, somebody's catching those passes. And that's creating better receivers than ever before. And it all gets thrown together into the same big vat with increased sensitivity to roughing the passer. And it all leads to more exciting football, more scoring, higher ratings, more money for the NFL. And ultimately, that's what it's all about.
You mentioned it, Mike. The roughing the passer penalties are up at a historic pace. Is the NFL going to use this as correlative evidence? Are they going to say eventually when we tell them the rule sucks that they don't care because the points are up and everybody's watching and that's part of the reason why?
Well, I think this is part of the ammunition that the league office will use in its ongoing tension with the competition committee over the roughing the passer fouls, because the conference call they had a couple of weeks ago, the end result was the competition committee wanting only obvious roughing the passer calls to be made, and the league office handling any other violations that are determined on careful review of game film through fines and ultimately suspensions. And the league office instructed the referees after that competition committee conference call, hey, if you see it, you call it. And that's what we've seen for the most part. I think there was some shying away in some instances, but there were some questionable calls this weekend that weren't blatant but still got called, and I think that that's what the league wants. And the league points to increased scoring, increased passing performances, and increased urgency to keep the best quarterbacks on the field.
We were also wondering if the turnover in the referee ranks had something to do with this, if there are more young referees, rookie referees, you've had some notable retirements, that maybe instead of a longtime guy being like, all right, I'll take it under advisement, boss, I know it when I see it, that there are some younger referees simply calling this to the letter of the instruction.
Well, but one of the guys who was the most notorious was Tony Corrente. He had a couple of controversial roughing calls in the week two game between the Vikings and the Packers. So I think it's just inconsistency among the 17 referees, period. I talked to TJ Watt after his 3-sack performance against the Falcons that also included a questionable roughing call. And he said, I can't worry about it because I understand some referees are going to call it, some aren't. So I'm just going to go play, and whatever happens, happens. And if they give up 15 yards of field position, so be it. I'll just sit back and hope I don't get fined.
Odell Beckham, I think, is right about what he's saying concerning the Giants. The problem is he's saying it out loud. How long can that last? How quickly can that situation disintegrate completely?
Well, you know, the Giants got very lucky on this for a couple of reasons. First of all, the players didn't know what he said, and a lot of them still don't know what he said. And as crazy as that sounds for those of us who obsess over every little nugget and piece of information we can get about football, I talked to somebody yesterday who's plugged in with the Giants locker room, and this person said to me, hey, you ask them about Fortnite, they'll tell you about Fortnite. You ask them about football, they don't know. And you throw a short week on top of that. They don't have a day off to catch up on anything or do radio spots where people ask them questions about it, make them aware maybe of things they didn't otherwise know about. And I think that that's contributed to the Giants players not reacting maybe the way we thought they would to some of these comments, because most of them still don't know what he said, because they're not in the locker room an hour before kickoff watching the pregame shows to see Odell Beckham's interview with Lil Wayne riding sidecar to the conversation. And I think that helped the Giants get past this. Now, does it get past it long-term? Do these problems still arise? Rodney Harrison had a great point yesterday on PFT Live with me that at some point somebody's got to hold this guy accountable, whether it's coaching staff or the players. And until someone does, he's going to continue to create these disruptions from time to time.
We have played the comments of John Clayton on our sister station WIP in Philadelphia. He was speculating that perhaps Jordan Howard would be a target of the Eagles in trade as they try to shore up the running back position. And some of that might be bolstered in context because there were trade rumors that surrounded Howard shortly after the arrival of the Nagy regime in April, wondering about the kind of fit that he would be for this system. Are you hearing anything that legitimizes this, or is this completely made up?
Well, I think it may be informed speculation, because the idea is if Howard doesn't fit, what can you do to get value for him? But the counterbalance to that is his contract. He's still operating under the terms of a very favorable rookie contract. That's one of the most important benefits to teams of the 2011 collective bargaining agreement. It creates a true rookie wage scale, and it makes it so much cheaper to keep guys around. So you can keep Jordan Howard around at a bargain basement price and use him at will. And you use him and Tariq Cohen, and Jordan Howard's not complaining about it, at least not publicly. Maybe he is privately, but you keep him around because dollar for dollar, it makes a ton of sense. And then next year you make a decision when he's in the final year of his contract what you're going to do. So unlike a LeSean McCoy who's been linked to the Eagles and he's making significantly more money, unlike a Le'Veon Bell where it's just a problem for the Steelers to figure out what they're going to do with him, those are the two names that have come up. But the Eagles clearly need help when it comes to the running back position. They claim they're going to stand pat, but I think that's just part of the posturing that you have to do in order to do the best possible deal when the trade deadline arrives. And if you have the Bears involved and the Steelers and the Bills, the more teams you can get involved, the better chance you have to work out a deal where you can help yourself the best possible way. But from the Bears' perspective, that just means they have to really be motivated to move him and be willing to take maybe less than they would get, because the Eagles are going to have other options.
With all the money they've spent, though, whether it be on offense or defense, and specifically tied up in Khalil Mack, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to move a guy who's cost-controlled
exactly. And
productive.
You're exactly right. That's why you hang on to him, and then you let him walk away as a free agent, and you get the compensatory draft pick consideration the year after he goes. But you're right. You know, running backs especially, if they're productive and you have them at a cheap rate, you use them up, and then when it's time to move on, they move on.
What did you find meaningful about the Drew Brees celebration, the record-breaking, everything that was said about him?
Well, two things. First of all, David Baker wearing white gloves to handle a football. I thought the guy was getting ready to give somebody a prostate exam, and as my radio producer Stats pointed out, that's a terrifying prospect because he is a very large man with very large hands. And secondly, can we give Drew Brees something more significant than a laminated piece of paper commemorating the achievement? I mean, if I was him, and you know how when you have something like that laminated, you can kind of flip it like a frisbee and just off it goes. That's what I'd have done with the thing. It's like, really? I'm the all-time leading passer in NFL history, and you give me a laminated sheet of paper. So I thought that, one more point, I thought that, you know, ESPN was a little over the top with the Drew Brees praise. I don't know where the right balance is. But then at one point, Booger McFarland says, you know, he may end up one of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time. No, he's already top 10. He's got all the records. He will have all the records. He's still got passing touchdowns to achieve before he retires. And he's got a championship, and he may have a second one. He's already top 10. The question is, how high up the list does he finish? And he's still got more football to play.
After the whole thing against the Buccaneers, we talked a little bit, Mike, about the league-wide perception of Mitch Trubisky and whether that's changed or not. Maybe the better question to ask, and here's one for you, is whether the league perception on Matt Nagy has changed some, whether the idea of a guy who can make the scheme work against defenses that are hurting in places, whether that's altered the perception of the head coach of the Bears.
Well, look, I think that this Andy Reid coaching tree has bumped up in esteem around the league between Doug Peterson winning a championship, Andy Reid 5-0 again for the second straight year. They're trying this year to not have 5-0 become 6-6. And you look at what they've done, and what a challenge this week, a Dolphins team that, you know, started off 3-0 and has balance, and you're playing them in Miami, and you got 2 weeks to get ready for it. And that's been one of Andy Reid's staples. When you have 2 weeks to get ready for a game, he's almost unbeatable. So it'll be interesting to see what the Bears have. And you know, you get to 4-1. I mean, I'm trying to find the teams that can disrupt Rams, Saints as the top two seeds in the NFC, and I think the Bears are one of the teams that maybe can.
Is there anything to this cluster of missed kicks, or is this just like that time in the summer when there's a couple of shark attacks and immediately it becomes the year of the shark? Is it just a statistical anomaly, or is kicking worse because kickers are looked at as more fungible than they used to be?
No, I think the problem is, and we saw the decline in overall kicking accuracy begin when they moved the extra point from the 2 back to the 15 where the snap happens. And the thinking was, by taking away that chip shot gimme kick, that's that way that kickers can kind of keep everything greased and loose. And you go out and you have that, you know, it's almost impossible to miss an extra point that's a 19-yard field goal. So now it's a real field goal that you have to kick. And so that maybe gives these guys a little bit more of the yips, and that's contributed to this rash, I think, of missed kicks, because you don't, you know, it's one thing to kick into the net on the sideline. It's another thing to go out there and be in game conditions and snap, spot, hold, kick. And you do that for a couple of touchdowns. It's easier to do it when it's time to go kick a field goal. So maybe there's something to that. And I think it does date back to when they pushed that snap point from the 2 to the 15.
You don't get the sense anything's changing back on that because of a spate of missed kicks.
No, I think
right?
They like that. Yeah. I think they like it. They want teams to go for it more on fourth down. They want teams to go for 2 more frequently. I think one of the biggest stories of the weekend that justifies more attention is that after 23 years of the 2-point conversion being part of the NFL, we're finally having the conversation. And I'd like to say that, boy, it would have been great for me to think of this at some point. The idea that when you're down 14 in the second half, you go for 2 and you score a touchdown. To put yourself in position to win the game in regulation, and how the analytics actually favor that going for 2. Because everybody's like, what the hell is Doug Peterson doing when the Eagles were down 14 to the Vikings and they went for 2 and they got it? You enhance the chance of winning in regulation. You still can go for 2 if you get another touchdown. And if you go for 1, you're just playing for overtime. And with overtime, you may lose. You're going to have more reps that you expose your players to. I mean, the Browns have played 30 extra minutes in 5 games. So I think that we may see more coaches do this if more people get behind the idea that it's not unconventional. So many coaches are afraid to do what's unconventional, but it's not unconventional to go for 2 when you're down 14, and maybe we'll see more coaches finally embrace this idea of just going for 2 generally.
It's so hard to have some of these conversations because it's a broader conversation about game theory, about what is simply objectively the right thing to do to increase your team's likelihood at the margins of winning the game. I heard yesterday at our afternoon show, McNeil and Parkins were talking to Brian Billick and bringing up some of these ideas about what to do and when to do it and when to go for it, even if it's 4th and 3. And Bill, you know, I love Brian, but he just like, well, you know, these numbers don't know what's really going on. They don't know the pulse of your team. They don't know the trend line of a game and all that. And I'm yelling in my car. That's not the point. The point is there are hard numbers that suggest likelihoods based on outcomes independent of all that. And I'm just wondering what it's going to take to not coaches, broadcasters, everybody around football have that sort of baseball-like enlightenment that there's a completely different way to look at these things.
It all comes down, in my opinion, to what is perceived as conventional and what is perceived as unconventional, because coaches know if they do the conventional thing and fail, nobody's going to say boo. If you do the unconventional thing and fail, then you get criticized, and if you do that enough, it becomes a factor in whether or not you're going to be fired at some point. I really do think that has a lot to do with it. And now we're seeing, you know, this whole concept of going for it on fourth down becoming more of an open question. And Jason Garrett does the conservative thing on Sunday night in overtime, and he punts fourth and one from the Houston 42, and he gets criticized for doing what, you know, we would call maybe the more conventional thing, pin them down, try to hold them there and get the ball back and get the game-winning field goal. You have more of a willingness now by coaches and by media and by fans and by owners to accept this notion of going for it on fourth down. And I think that going for two could fall into that same category. And it all traces back to Doug Peterson. He's the reason so many guys are going for it on fourth down, or at least considering it. And I think he's the reason now, if we go forward with this whole idea of behind by 14, going for two instead of going for one.
Mike, thank you as always. We appreciate it.
See you guys.
That is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Our conversation will turn to basketball next. It's Vincent Goodwill, who is of NBC Sportsnet Chicago and soon to be of Yahoo Sports nationally, is going to talk a little round ball with us.
Talk defense with Vincent Goodwill. Yeah. Next, it's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at Play.
Are you concerned about the defense and so far what's looking like in preseason, or do you kind of weigh the fact that full package isn't in, it's kind of a newer defense? I mean, how much is concern, how much is, well, it's just kind of the pace of the scheme and learning the scheme?
It's all the same, basically. Just a matter of, like, trying to hit them back with a good offense in return. That's how I feel like, because we go in a lot of slumps, too. And we have some good looks. And it doesn't help that, you know, we don't make baskets, but can't let that allow to dictate our defensive energy, too.
It's all the same, and that I don't care about any of it. You can call it whatever you want, but we're just going to try to score points. We don't play defense here in Chicago
Thank
anymore.
You, no.
Did you get the memo, Cowley? That was Jabari Parker. Here to talk a little basketball is, are we saying goodbye to Vincent Goodwill? He's on Twitter at VGoodwill, and... So before we talk basketball, let's talk about you, Vincent. So it's no more NBC Sportsnet Chicago. You are moving on to bigger and better things as a national guy with Yahoo?
That's the rumor, apparently. I saw like a blog post about me from the Big Lead, and I was surprised at that myself. I had to call my agent to see if I got fired or something.
No, but in all seriousness, this is a good thing, right?
Yeah, it is. It is a good thing. Like I said, let me say how much I've appreciated my time in Chicago through the years. I know I catch a lot of flack for wanting to go back to Detroit stuff and everything else, but I really, really enjoyed my time covering the Bulls, you know, doing media, doing all these different things here. And yeah, it is time to do something bigger, I guess, a bigger step covering the league nationally for Yahoo. A great opportunity for me. It was something I didn't expect, but it's certainly no shade to the people here in Chicago and the work that I've done because I've truly enjoyed it.
Well, congratulations to you. And before you go national, let's reflect a little bit on your time as a beat writer. It's got to be somewhat refreshing to hear a guy like Jabari talk about an aspect of the game with such, you know, frank attitude as he does. Does that help at all? Does that feel like anything you've ever felt before covering a team like this?
That's a little weird, right? To hear a guy basically say, hey, we're just going to try to outscore teams, you know, or usually guys will couch in and say, look, as long as we can get stops late, as long as we can get stops defensively, you know, at the right team. But Jabari's just come out there and basically spoken his truth and just said, hey, look, we're going to try to outscore guys. We got, you know, he's not saying it, but basically he's saying, look, we got three guys on this roster when fully healthy that can get you 25 a night. And usually when you have that, you start framing your team around, you know, the old Phoenix Suns, the Houston Rockets, you know, and basically just trying to outscore teams. And here's the thing, when you're young, as this team still is, and I know people are trying to put playoff expectations on this team, I'd rather you be young, exciting, and bad than slow, young, and bad. You know what I'm saying? So if I'm a Bulls fan, I would take this game of basketball over, you know, playing halfway decent defense but not being able to score and still losing.
Yeah, I just wonder what culture you start to build. I mean, it's not like you can get a year, 2 years in and then say, okay, now we're going to start playing defense because now we can. Some of the principles of this and some of the building blocks of this with these guys who matter, can you ever get back to it? Like, do you ever get to a point where it's like, okay, now we're going to try on defense?
Well, it depends on what are we in this for. You know, when you acquire a Jabari Parker, what does that say about your roster construction? You know, so what does it say about your goals when you already have a marketing, when you have a Zach LaVine? You know, he was being brought in to score. Like, nobody expected, at least not from my standpoint. I didn't expect when they brought in Jabari Parker that he was going to be some type of defensive stopper. Like, we know the book on him. And he's a gifted, a talented scorer who on defense is not necessarily going to be out here stopping guys. So while on one hand I completely understand what you're saying, but I think it goes to a bigger question about the construction of the roster and where you're trying to go. You can only build a culture with guys who want to feel what you're trying to do. But if you look at the roster of players, like Zach LaVine is a pretty good on-ball defender. You know, when you start getting into switching and off the ball and stuff like that, you know, you can get into a little bit of trouble there. But he said he's trying to get out of those habits. Jabari Parker just come out and just say, look, man, we're just out here trying to outscore guys. But if you look at the culture of sports all the way around, guys, look at the NFL scores over the weekend. Look at, you know, the passer ratings. Look at the way the quarterbacks are dominating everything. It seems like the culture of offense is what people are buying into and what the leagues are sort of mandating to teams. So I wouldn't say it's much more so a team thing. It seems like to be more of a sport culture thing.
How did Lauri Markkanen fit into that culture you're talking about specifically with this team, and how what is the word on that elbow at this point?
I mean, I just think it's one of those things where it was a freak injury. You know, he didn't even realize, you know, the severity of it. You know, he kept playing through practice, and then after practice, basically he was, you know, complaining that it was feeling kind of numb and there was some pain there and everything else. I guess that's like the joy of being in your early 20s where you can, you know, severely injure yourself and just keep playing without, you know, luckily it didn't get worse in that time. He didn't do anything else to further injure it. But I think because it's such a wide time frame, you know, I think it's just going to be something that they're going to monitor week by week. I don't think he's shooting or anything like that. I think they don't have the greatest of high expectations this season, so they're going to let it heal in, so they don't want to rush it back. And I'm sort of curious to see how they're going to play it when he gets back, because this team is going to be in some sort of a rhythm, be it good or bad, and then you're going to throw a pretty big cog that you fancy as the future of your franchise back in there, and that's sure to sort of ruffle a few feathers because guys will get used to roles and minutes and shots.
We're going to do a quick update and get back to Vincent Goodwill. Talk a little more basketball. The Jimmy Butler saga merits some attention.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Talking NBA with Vincent Goodwill, and a big story here with some former Chicago names and faces is that now the latest on the Jimmy Butler Timberwolves saga. He apparently put some sort of artificial deadline on his trade demand, and the problem with the trade demand is nobody's offering enough for him because, as is usually the case underpinning any Jimmy Butler story, he's not as good at basketball as he thinks he is. Is it possible that he could actually play until February with this team after all that has happened and all that's gone on between him and Thibodeau and Karl Anthony Towns?
I think anything's possible, guys, especially with the NBA. This is kind of, you know, the silly league when it comes to those type of demands and everything else. And not that I fought Jimmy Butler at all for wanting out of there. And to go back to your original point, who's as good as basketball as they think they are? Like,
LeBron.
I'm not as good as basketball as I think I am. You know what I'm saying? So when you're a world-class athlete, a top-10 player in the league, and a guy who came from the place that Jimmy Butler came from, you have to have an inflated sense of your worth to get to where he's gotten to because he didn't have a pedigree. So when you look at where things are, and I don't think it's because Jimmy Butler isn't valued across the league. I think it's because, A, he's got Thibodeau miles on him, which is completely different than any other type of miles that a player can have, you know, on his body. secondly is they don't know where he's going to be come July, you know, as far as, you know, him wanting that max contract, which he would certainly ask for, and anybody else worth being a top 10 player would ask for. You don't give up a whole lot when you don't know that the player is going to stay with you. I think the Timberwolves have screwed this up because Jimmy Butler, it's been long known that Jimmy Butler has wanted out of Minnesota. This wasn't just something that magically came out of the air 3 days before training camp. This was something that was expressed to the Timberwolves in June. So for everybody to say Jimmy Butler is playing the drama act and everything else, I firmly believe, I have it on pretty good authority, that Glenn Taylor has known about Jimmy Butler's wishes since June.
If I told you that I've been to the future Friday and Jimmy Butler did get traded, what would you say they got in return? What's he worth?
Well, what he's worth and what they'll get in return are two different things. I think what they'll get in return, which should be two solid players, you know, and if you want to throw in some type of conditional pick with heavy protections on it, you know, fine. But you can be worth, a good player like that can be worth two solid players. If you look at what Paul George was traded for, if you look at, and I think that's what Minnesota is looking for. They're looking for the next sort of Oladipo, you know, type of player. But Oladipo wasn't that type of player when OKC traded him. He was sort of an underachiever or a guy who couldn't live up to being the number two pick in the draft, you know, a few years ago. But I think he's worth, Jimmy Butler is worth two rotation players, if not one top-end rotation player, and then maybe some filler after that. Like, you're never going to get a return on a top 10 player. It just doesn't happen in today's game. It's not equitable. So if the Timberwolves are expecting that, then they got another thing coming.
I haven't had a chance to watch any Lakers preseason games. I know that we need to get used to the fact there's going to be a lot of attention paid there on LeBron James and his land of misfit toys. What have you seen, and how long will it take before they're decent?
Wow. I think to some degree, people are undervaluing how great LeBron James is. as amazing, as crazy as that, as blasphemous as that sounds for me saying this in this particular city, I think, I won't say that the Lakers are a contender, but I firmly believe that they are a second-round playoff team, even if they are not necessarily a top-four team in terms of record. I think they're going to start off slowly because that's what LeBron teams do when he comes to a new team. That Miami team started off slow. That Cleveland team started off slow when he came back. It's an adjustment period. And I don't know if this is the roster that they're going to have, you know, come February, even though they have a bunch of guys on, you know, one-year contracts. I'm wondering if they're going to maneuver and swing something bigger, you know, as time goes on. So, yeah, I would say around All-Star break, you're not going to see the best of that Lakers team. But the thing is, there's a rule that I have about certain players in the league that you have to – you. It sounds very simple and elementary, but to beat that guy four times over the course of 2 weeks, are you telling me any team short of the Golden State Warriors and an overrated Western Conference, can you say with confidence that any team is going to do that?
I need to see him. I need to see if he's got enough shooting around him to make sure that he doesn't have five people guarding him.
It might not.
What? Here's the thing. What was the Bobby Knight quote? We need a center. Play Jordan at center. That's what this is. It doesn't matter. We need shooting. Let LeBron shoot. We need rebounding. Let LeBron rebound. He's that great.
I thought the Bobby Knight quote was, I'm going to choke you. Just for sake of checking the box, did Kyrie Irving mean it when he said he's staying in Boston?
Did he sign anything?
No.
Okay.
That's kind of what I figured.
Look, you're going to say what you can – put it like this. He's trying to do the anti-Kevin Durant, where KD is leaving his options open and leaving it open to speculation, what he's going to do after the season and everything else. And you can kind of intimate that he's going – maybe he's going to leave. I would say it's more – I would say more likely than not, but that's the feeling that I get. With Kyrie, he doesn't want to have to answer these questions time after time, you know – stop after stop, especially when you have to make two stops, double the stops in the New York area, you know, during the season because you're playing the Nets and the Knicks. And even though the Nets aren't going to be in real competition for him, you're going to have those same writers and those same narratives being pointed out. So to just sort of try to put a little bit of cold water on the speculation,
even if you have no intention of really signing back with Boston, you go ahead and say, yeah, I'm going to come back and all this other type of stuff. But I don't put anything into it unless a guy signs.
Vincent, best of luck on the new venture, and stay in touch. We hope you'll still pick up the phone when we call.
What are you guys' name again?
Vincent.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Thanks, guys.
Vincent Goodwill.
With the guys playing with LeBron.
Yeah. Vincent Goodwill soon to be of Yahoo Sports. At the top of the hour, we're going to do the midday midway. We have things to do before then. I have for you coming up next one of the most unfortunate banners that has ever been raised to the rafters of a professional sports arena.
Talk about putting the expectations bar wherever you feel like it. That is exactly what's going on here.
I don't know how many meetings something like this takes to get approved and the number of people that have to say, yes, we want to honor our team by hanging this banner, but somebody went and done it. We'll tell you what we're talking about next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's your first chance today to win $1,000 in cash on The Score.
It's a lot of money.
It is a lot. There's going to be three different chances. This is chance number one. This hour's keyword is university. It's a lot of letters.
It's a lot of letters for a lot of money.
Text university to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is university. He is at university to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
Next hour's keyword is anti-disestablishmentarianism.
So leave it to the Nashville Predators. But man, they hung three banners.
All of
three on their opening night.
These are great.
They hung three banners. Central Division Champions 2017-2018.
Yay.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
Very cool. President's Trophy.
All right. It is a trophy. You do get it.
Yeah, that's the best regular season record.
Huh? Which was always flames out in the playoffs.
And then there's a third banner that says
Stanley Cup
champions. In big letters, it says Western Conference Champions. Okay?
Huh?
But they weren't Western Conference Champions.
I don't remember that happening.
No, that was Las Vegas. That
yes.
was the Golden Knights. They were the actual Western Conference Champions. But no.
Very entertaining.
So their banner specifies in between the saber-toothed tiger logo and the word Western are very small letters that say regular season.
Go Bears!
They're hanging a banner that says regular season.
It says
Western Conference Champions.
It says meh.
Come
Nashville
on.
Predators. Meh.
Yeah, three banners. M E H.
Did it, guys.
I mean,
that beginning of the season goal we all had. One goal, just finish at the top of the Western Conference in the regular season.
Come on. Don't. And you know, meanwhile, Alex Ovechkin is still drunk.
He's very drunk.
He's
just incredibly drunk.
They actually won something. Is this right, Jay types of the Capitals actually have a banner for winning one of the Winter Classic games?
Yeah, why not? Hang a banner. They didn't have a lot to hang around there prior to last season.
Yeah, banner inflation is a thing, I think.
Well, there's a lot of rafters, Dan. You know, if they're just all empty with no banners whatsoever, it just kind of gets cold.
It's basically nuts.
Basically.
Yeah, what? Come on. Regular season Western Conference champions, you know.
That's not a thing.
Right.
You can win the President's Trophy, and you can get a banner for that. Best record in the league? But sure.
Sure, you get a banner.
Conference champion? Yes. There's no regular season Western Conference champion. That's not a thing.
Team's going to raise banners for winning a home run derby, winning an all-star challenge.
Well,
you get banners for that.
And actually, Deadspin says the Colts have the most embarrassing banner. In 2015, they hung a banner that said 24
worst fourth down attempt.
We got the number one draft pick.
It's a 2014 AFC finalist. They were in an AFC championship game, but they lost the game. So they hung a banner that said 2014 AFC finalist.
So four runners up. That is awful.
Does someone have unilateral control of what they put on banners there? Are there no meetings?
I don't know. But then I did not know this. The Oilers have a banner for greatest team as voted on by fans. The Oilers have a banner for 100 consecutive sellouts, and the Oilers have a banner honoring Garth Brooks.
What?
Cool.
Yeah, come
cool,
on.
Cool, cool.
The banner we're hanging this season honors the banner we hung last season. It's just commemorating the banner that we hung last year.
Elton John and Billy Joel have banners at the Madison Square Garden. They do for consecutive shows sold out, I think.
Seriously?
Are they permanently hung, the banners?
They're there all the time.
They're always there.
Yep. I thought the sellout record belonged to the Wiggles. Didn't it?
They also have a banner.
Right, they should.
Right next to Mark Messier.
The original members of the Wiggles.
That's a banner.
They still had Greg.
That's a banner I figured that the Colts would hang. Just Jim Irsay hanging a banner for the Wiggles.
It's just Jim Irsay hanging.
Fired up.
Yeah, it's him. It's him and Alex Ovechkin just swinging from the rafters together. I mean, that is...
Jim's made a lot of proposals about banners over the last few seasons. Not all of them have gotten up yet.
No. And actually, if you're doing one for Billy Joel and Elton John, that should be Wrigley.
Should be. They've provided money to the Chicago Cubs. Crane said
hey,
so.
You fired up.
And I'm watching out of the corner of my eye here this massive storm that is headed to destroy Florida.
It's gigantic.
When did this storm, like all of a sudden, this is like a Katrina-level event that came out of nowhere?
It's Category 4 hurricane. I can't imagine
increasing.
That all of a sudden coalesced.
But what?
It had to have taken some time to get together.
I kind of thought it did, and then all of a sudden it's here, and apparently people didn't leave.
Why would you not have left?
The Florida governor is saying that people, what he's calling it, Forrest Gump syndrome.
What the hell is that?
The governor is saying it's too late to leave. You can't leave. You're going to die.
Right,
the
but what
shelters
does it have to do
gonna...
with Forrest
I don't
Gump
know.
Syndrome?
Maybe it's because everybody thinks they're Lieutenant Dan and they can...
Shouldn't that be Lieutenant Dan syndrome?
They can ride out the hurricane?
Either way, that seems like a terrible syndrome to have, an idea to propagate.
There was also the Carl Hiaasen character Skink, the former Florida governor himself, Clinton Tyree, who actually hung from a rope on a bridge to ride out a hurricane.
Well, that seems safe.
Well, it's a Hiaasen novel.
That seems safe. As long as the bridge checks out,
real.
That should work out fine.
And no, they don't get to have a banner for surviving the hurricane. But he called it Forrest Gump syndrome because people are just like, it's fine. I don't see a hurricane yet. Or they think it's fake news and they don't trust the fact that weather forecasters actually know what's coming.
That seems like a bad idea to do with a hurricane. I mean, if you want to call other things fake news, that's fine. Impending death, I don't know that I'd take the chance on that being fake news.
Yeah, 15-foot storm surge?
That's something you actually take to heart.
Mike is in Skokie. He's on the score. Hello, Mike.
Hey, this is completely non-sports related, Dan. I just wanted to sing your praises. I just left the local Whole Foods, did the bacon hack. Is the greatest thing ever. I literally was shaking as I was leaving the door because I felt like I stole something. Mm-hmm. I was so excited. So I just want to just call and just give you a shout out for that, man.
How many slices did you get?
Too many, Dan. I'm driving right now. I'm still eating. Too many. And the best part was when the lady was like, "What's in here? There's nothing in here." I was like, "Oh, you have no idea, lady."
Oh, yeah.
Gold. It's fried gold.
Yes.
There's gold in there, baby.
Enjoy.
Yeah, take care. Okay, I'll try to crash while I'm eating and driving.
Enjoy, Mike.
Sounds like that man put down $2.80 for bacon.
Oh, that's the whole tin.
Oh yeah, $2.80. Fill it up.
That's the entire container. $2.80 split. That's almost gross.
Egregious.
If you're spending up to $3 on the bacon hack, come on. I mean, right around two is more than enough for
me. Max bacon.
More than enough.
$2 is.
$2 is
damn
like,
near 12 strips.
No,
right?
it's like 8 to 10
okay.
Usually.
That's pretty serious.
That's by the time I'm done, I've dare I say, I've had enough bacon for the moment.
Mm.
Like I'm there. I'm good.
Does the guilt melt away like the fat rendered off bacon? You know, the idea that, you know, Mike's leaving the store shaking because he felt like he stole something. Does that kind of guilt melt away after
it's
you
not,
finish
it's
the bacon?
Not like what happened to me at Treasure Island. That's
good.
That was a complete nightmare.
Glad to
hear.
That
was an absolute nightmare.
By the way, pay those people their money.
Oh, the employees?
Pay them.
Yeah.
Why are you not paying them? Pay them.
Yeah, you can't kind of go out of business and then say, by the way,
we're going to
violate the law. And they're vendors, too, apparently.
Right.
I mean, it was employees and it was vendors that had dropped off a bunch of produce. And there's some federal statute about...
And they're going to hang it on we're just closing a plant. No,
you're not.
Not how that works.
You're a grocery store.
And you can't do that. You have to pay those people. Pay them their money.
Midday Midway is coming up, and I'm going to ask you the Alanis Morissette question. Is this irony?
Okay.
I'm going to read you a news story, and then you will tell me if it defines irony.
I'm worried that we may have a similar story, if not the same one, if that's the case, because I'm approaching irony as well.
Does it take place in Vermont?
I'm not sure. I don't have the state of origin in front of me. I also
I
have
didn't
a story
say Oregon.
About it.
I said Vermont.
Hi! Good Lord. We've got to say goodbye to something that needed to go, that needed to be said goodbye to a long time ago and is actually going away. And that's not Vincent Goodwill. He doesn't need to go anywhere, but he is. No, we need to say goodbye to something else instead in the Midday Midway. That'll be next on Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.